Welcome to Sex with Simmery. Frank, occasionally explicit edutainment on the most important topic of all. Sex with Simmery is not intended for children and is not safe for work unless your boss is particularly awesome. See more at sexwithsimmery.com.
Hey, Sex with Simmery fans. I want to hang out with you, and you should come hang out with me. And two upcoming opportunities for us to hang out and talk about sexy things are at Kink Shop in Old City, Philadelphia. You should totally come join me. Two of the upcoming dates are October 19th for negotiating with your partner. So that's going to be about anything that is useful that you would want to talk about with a partner, whether it be little or big, complicated, simple, whatever. It'll be a lot of fun. It'll be kind of ridiculous, actually. And then November 16th, we have troubleshooting your sex life. So in any way that your personal sex life is not matching up to your ideal, let's do some work on that. We'll figure it out. Let's make the two become the same thing. So again, negotiating with your partner, October 19th, troubleshooting your sex life, November 16th. You can get your tickets ahead of time from Kink Shop in Philadelphia on Brown Paper Tickets. There's also Facebook events forum, so you can also message me if you have questions on those things. So I hope to see you, Kink Shop, Philadelphia. I will see you. Let's hang out. Bye. Welcome to Sex with Simmery. This is Dr. Simmery, and I am pleased as punch to introduce to you David Palumbo. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine.
We started off light before the conversation talking about Syria and whether genocide or war is worse. But instead of talking about that, because I know that everybody wanted to hear about that, we're just going to be like, no, we don't care. Instead, we're going to talk about naked ladies and art and all sorts of other cool stuff. So welcome.
Thank you.
And also thank you. David brought me these beautiful, beautiful books that are of his work. They're fucking incredible. Can you describe what these two books are?
I guess I should preface the whole interview with something that is a joke that's becoming more and more common, which is there's a reason that I paint pictures instead of write books, which is when it comes to describing anything that I've done, it can kind of go way off track and end up no place. But I just actually am releasing the second one next week. I just got them from the publisher, and it's a follow-up to the first volume, and both of them are just collections of paintings of a personal series that I've been working on for about 5 years now. And the subjects of the paintings are just people I know who are mostly models and burlesque dancers, and they're sexy nudes, to make it short.
Okay. And this isn't necessarily your full-time expression of your art. This is just sort of a separate thing that you do.
Yeah. I'm a freelance illustrator who does, mostly like genre themed work, fantasy and science fiction illustration, like, magic cards and book covers and all that kind of thing. And I've been doing that for about, I think, like, maybe about 8 years full-time now. And sometimes I do some gallery work. And then when I have am able to make the time in my schedule, I do personal work on the side of that. And so that's kind of where these all started.
So the interesting thing to me is that your side thing, which is not necessarily the main source of your income, is the beautiful women thing, which is fascinating because, like, to the burlesque performers who are in the book, like, this is actually going to be also their kind of side passion project too, and then they have to have their bread and butter job usually,
right,
as well.
Yeah. Since I work freelance, my money comes from all over the place, and I really honestly have no idea month to month, like, what I'm going to be doing. You know, this is a side thing, but, you know, I do enough of them that I could put out a book, which doesn't make a lot of money, but, you know, that contributes some to paying the bills. And then I also, you know, sell the paintings sometimes. And so that too. So, you know, it's kind of, I think early on, I started adopting the habit of having lots of different plates spinning at the same time. And so, you know, this is just one of those things. And it's also like, it keeps things interesting. So I don't get tired of doing the same thing every day.
Okay. So what inspired you specifically to find live models to do illustrations of? Do you use live models for the fantasy work at all?
I actually don't use live models for these or for the fantasy work.
Oh, okay.
Much as I would like to, but I bring models into my studio and we shoot a whole bunch of photos and then I work from those for the paintings. And it's the same way as I work with the fantasy stuff and with pretty much everything, like since I came out of school. Painting from life was something that I haven't done in a long time and I miss it, but it's time consuming and expensive to have models like full time.
Just like holding one pose for hours. Yeah. That would be intense.
Yeah.
Oh, and, my God. I get sore thinking about it.
I mean, there are people who work that way.
Yeah.
And I think that sounds like a great way to do it if you have the situation that would allow for it. But unfortunately, I don't even know. It's probably been 5 years since I've done any life painting.
So why sexy ladies specifically?
I'd been doing illustration for a few years. And when I started, I was working in a very tightly rendered and polished style. And that was something that, you know, I was really into. And when I was in school, I remember like they wanted us to paint chunky and painterly. And I was like, no, I want everything to be smooth and rendered and polished. And so I really kind of steered myself in that direction. And also in part because that was what I felt was going to be easier to get in the market with, getting work. And so I'd been doing that for a few years, and while I was doing it, I was starting to get a little frustrated and a little bit bored with it and starting to appreciate more and more painters who could work in a more expressive and painterly way. And so I started like getting this kind of, you know, like it was just something that I really wanted to try, and I wasn't sure if I would like it or not, but it just seemed like, you know, why not? And the problem was that you can't just like, if somebody hires you to do something based on all the work that you've done, and then you turn around and say, hey, here's the job you are paying me to do, and it looks nothing like my other work, but I think you're really gonna like it. You know, like nobody's happy with that situation. So I decided to start doing these paintings as just kind of like a personal experiment for myself. And I wasn't sure if I was gonna do, like, I think that my original idea was that I was probably gonna paint like maybe like 5 or 10 of these paintings and just kind of see, you know, see how it felt to work a little bit looser, and didn't really expect it to go much further than that. And so that was what the first models that I worked with are friends of yours.
Mm-hmm. I know a lot of these people.
And Annie Abom, who are, you know, friends of mine. Like Anna and I go back a number of years at this point. And so they were people that I knew and I felt comfortable, like also that they were performers. I didn't feel really awkward about asking them to take their clothes off and pose. I'm actually really shy about that kind of thing. And, you know, to ask someone who doesn't do that as part of their living or their like, I don't know how you'd say exactly, like you were saying, like, side interests, mm-hmm. and that kind of thing, would have felt really weird to me.
That's such, I mean, that is a whole interesting conversation in and of itself, is like the number of people who would love actually to do this sort of thing but aren't performers. Like, they don't necessarily dance, they don't necessarily want to do this on a stage, but like, I'm curious if after this came out, if you started to get people who were like, I would like to be in this.
I've occasionally had people ask me about it. I've had people ask me about commissioning pieces, like somebody who wanted a painting of their girlfriend or wife. That's happened a couple of times, and I've usually said no. There's been two exceptions to that. Because if I don't know the people, it doesn't feel comfortable to me.
Okay.
That's usually the reason that I would say no. And
what is the discomfort?
I think it's that I feel like it is a really personal thing. And I mean, some of the models I don't know very well. You know, definitely, like, there's some that I'm friends with who we've known we've known each other a long time, and there are a couple others in there who are people that I've seen them in shows. But even just like seeing them in shows, I kind of like would watch them perform and kind of get to know their personality through that. Mm-hmm. And I think if it's just like some random person, the chances are that it would probably be fine and not weird. But there's just that part of me that's like, I don't want, like, I started doing this just as a thing for myself. Just like, this was something that I was interested in. And that was another important thing, was since I was doing it as this like personal experiment, if a painting looked really bad, I didn't have to ever show it to anybody. I could just pretend it never happened. And that's not something that I'm really able to do in my work, because, you know, the client needs their results. And if I'm doing a commission for somebody, and actually, in a sense, like doing a commission, a private commission, a portrait or something like that, is the most amount of pressure. Because like when I'm working on a illustration for a client, for one thing, I like pretty much know the drill, and I understand like we're solving solutions, and I understand what, you know, they're trying to sell a product or whatever, and this painting has to fit their needs. And then if there's anything that they need changed, it's not like personal. It's just, you know, we realize that we want this thing to be like that. It's going to work better for the product. And with a personal commission, I feel like it's so, you really don't want the person to be unhappy with it, you know? And if I don't know the person, it's a lot harder to feel comfortable, like I understand what they're after. Actually, I just did one recently for someone that I don't know very well, but it was an anniversary gift, for a wife getting as a gift for her husband. And we know each other a little bit, not real well. And because of that, like while I was painting it, I was starting to get this kind of anxiety of like, you know, I don't want it to look like, you know, I want the likeness to be just right. I don't want it to look like this was an afterthought. Like I want to give it my full attention and I wanted to show that. And I think like that's not probably a problem except in my head, but like you start thinking about these things and then you get like all uptight and it kind of affects the way you work, you know? And like when I'm doing these paintings that are in the book, where if it doesn't turn out, it doesn't matter. I'm just like a little bit more free to take chances with things that, you know, I probably might hesitate on a little bit if I feel like I'm trying to guess what somebody wants to see, but I don't quite know.
This is for, like, immediately popped into my mind every time I've ever been in, like, an art museum where I go through, like, especially Middle Ages European portraiture. There's some weird-looking people captured in painting. And I'm always curious, like, were they cool with that picture? Is that what they looked like? Was it styled to go to the aesthetics of that time? Because there have been, like, obviously big sweeping changes in what is attractive, you know, from like the teeth spacing thing and like the big weird foreheads, and like aside from the fact that, you know, body size has dramatically changed in art over the years, like what, like I wonder what that was like back then, and how, if there's some painting and some dead lady like is,
well, and also you think about
so
like,
mad about,
talk about pressure, some of these painters who had a patron, and that was their whole livelihood, was working for, you know, the church or for the, you know, the king or whatever. And I don't know if you know, there's this David painting of the coronation of Napoleon, I think, that's at the Louvre. It's this enormous, like 20 foot or something painting with, I don't know, 100 people in it, and just all kinds of crazy stuff. You know, that you can't imagine, like, how long he worked on this thing and what kind of pressure he was under to do this painting for Napoleon. And Napoleon was his client. And when he finished it, Napoleon comes in to see the painting, you know, and he's just, the story, as I had heard it, was that, you know, he's just standing there while Napoleon stands there without saying a word for, like, 20 minutes, just staring at the painting, like, kind of taking it in, you know, and he's just standing there thinking, like, is this good or bad, you know? And
it's like the longest 20 minutes of his life.
I'm sure. But, you know, I think I've never really done portraits. I've really only done a handful that were commissioned portraits in the traditional, like, you know, when you think of like a fireplace with like the arm on the fireplace kind of a thing. That's never been something that I really pursued. But I kind of get the feeling from talking to other people who do it that it's like you want to get, you really do want to make it look like the person, because if you glam them up too much, it might, you know,
maybe unrecognizable.
Yeah, if it doesn't look like them. So I think it's kind of like you want it to look like them on their best day. You know what I mean? Mm. Like, you do want to smooth out some, you know, crow's feet and that kind of thing, mm. but you don't want to give them a nose job or anything like that.
How does it feel to be painting these people who, for the most part, these are all very conventionally attractive, beautiful women. Like, I've seen them in real life, so I know you didn't have to do too much, you know, airbrushing on them, but they're still people.
I don't really try to glamorize, especially with these paintings. It might be different in illustration, and that's because, like, some clients are more picky about that kind of thing than others. But, no, with these, for me, it's more about, like, I really like getting the individual personality of the model. And when we're shooting the photos, I'll have ideas of what I want to do and sketches of, you know, poses. And a lot of it will be about, like, the what outfits they're wearing. Even though they're nudes, you know, usually there's some kind of...
some draping.
Something. Yeah, yeah. Something present. Because that creates a, you know, a context and a story more than just, you know, a naked person is a naked person. And it's a lot harder to tell a story without context and that kind of thing.
That's interesting. So what kind of story are these supposed to feel like you're watching your girlfriend undress? Is it supposed to, what kind of story?
That's kind of where it's ended up going is in that sort of direction. Like when I first started, when I was just doing them as kind of exercises, I didn't know what it was going to be. And so because Randy and Anna are both burlesque models, that was, or not models, but burlesque performers, that was something that I thought, like, okay, bring your gloves and your boas and, you know, your garters and stockings and all that kind of stuff, and we'll do, like, stuff with burlesque props. And I started doing some of those paintings, and it just kind of, like, didn't really seem to, like, it worked okay, I guess, but it didn't feel like what I was trying to do. And it felt more straight pin-up-y, which is fine, but that's, I think I just kind of felt like, oh, this isn't really as interesting as it could be to me. And so that was when I started, I think the next model I worked with after that, we used more kind of like, you know, everyday stuff, t-shirts and just, you know, t-shirts, jeans, simple dresses, jackets, things like that. Just like regular clothes. I think I just said, like, bring a whole bunch of stuff of like whatever clothes that you own that you really like, the things that you feel like, you know, put together a couple of outfits, and then we'll just kind of go through it and figure it out. And then they, you know, the models bring a lot of their own ideas in also when we're, you know, shooting the pictures. I'm generally, I feel like I make, sometimes I might make the model uncomfortable by not giving them feedback while the pictures are going on. Cause, you know, it's like, I don't really say anything if what they're doing is working, because it's like, I don't want to interrupt their thought process or be distracting or anything. But I'll warn them ahead of time. I'm like, it might feel like weird. If you feel like I'm just like not saying anything and that's like freaking you out, just say something about it, because I'll get totally caught up in what I'm doing and just thinking about, you know, my side of the camera. And I won't give direction unless I have an idea that I'm like, oh, do this thing. Or wait, let's go back to this other, or let's change outfits. But otherwise I'm like, let the ideas just kind of like go where they will, you know?
What is it like to be on that side of the camera? I've done like a minor amount of being on the side where you're getting shot at, but like, what's it feel like to be the one who, I mean, in many ways, your contributions to it aren't even necessarily going to be apparent until later. So like you're sort of in charge, but
being the one shooting the photos?
Yeah, and like this person is doing something in front of you that like socially it's still kind of, it is, even if they're comfortable with it, it's still kind of an interesting dynamic to be the clothed person while someone else is naked.
Right. I think that's part of the reason also that I feel most comfortable doing these kinds of paintings with people that I know at least a little bit, and because I feel like there's a lot of trust that needs to be there. And there are, I feel like sometimes I've worked with models, like, and I'm talking about doing this work and doing my regular, you know, illustration work. Occasionally I've worked with a model that was like through an agency or something, somebody that I didn't know. And I feel like there is like a tension that is not necessarily a good thing. Sometimes like there might be a tension, like especially like doing these, there might be a sort of tension to the photo shoot that is actually beneficial to what we're trying to do, because I want that like feeling of intimacy there. It can't be too casual and laid back, but when it's more of kind of like, I don't know where I am or who this person is that's taking pictures of me kind of attention, then that's like,
well, that's certainly like a style too. And I think, like, when I think of, like, Terry Richardson has a really weird feel. Like, for those who aren't familiar, like, he shoots people in often, like, extremely sexual situations with a sort of casualness to it that, you know, is sort of going for an exploitative, like, got some teenagers drunk and talked them into things sort of feel, even though they're not.
Sure, I mean, yeah. I told you, I think this was before we started the interview, that I get very concerned, as I think most people do, but more than most people want to admit, about how I come across.
Mm-hmm.
And a big thing for me has always been, like, I never want to be a creepy guy.
Okay.
And
well, I don't think anybody does.
No, but, like, I don't feel like I could shoot pictures like that, because I would feel so much like the creepy guy.
Okay.
That, like, taking pictures, like you're saying, that dynamic of being closed while the other person isn't to begin with, is already, like, skirting that line in a way, if you feel like the other person is the slightest bit uncomfortable, like, even just a tiny bit uncomfortable, I'd be like, let's not do this, let's, you know, and that's another thing I say, like, before we start, I'm always like, if there's anything you don't want to take off, if there's anything that you don't want to do, if at any moment it starts to feel, like, weird, please tell me, because I don't want you to feel bad about it later, and I don't want you to feel bad about it right now, you know? Like, I just don't want to be, like...
Have you ever been on the other side? I mean, just to even try it out? Had somebody shoot you?
I've never... Not nude. I mean, I've posed for, like... This is going back to, like, when I was in, you know, school. Like, posed for, like, a girlfriend or something, like... for life drawing.
Mm-hmm.
Privately. And I mean, I pose for photos, like clothed posing for photos, for myself all the time, which is like totally different. I know that doesn't count, but, I use myself as a model a lot in my illustration work. But also, for friends, for family, sometimes my parents and my brother are also all professional painters. And so sometimes, you know, usually in that case, it'll just be like, if you're handy, where they're like, oh, I need someone to stand in this pose and hold this thing, and are you free for the next 10 minutes, you know? So that's like...
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it's... And it also... I try to keep that in, like, those... What it feels like to be doing that in mind when I'm working with the model, and try to be aware of, like... I think it's interesting sometimes, like, if you've done some modeling, you might have experienced this, where... you feel like it's going to look a certain way, and then you see the pictures and it's totally different from what you thought it was going to be. Or like if they're asking, like if the photographer is asking you to give a certain expression or mood to what you're doing, and you'll feel like, I'm doing that. And then you look at the photos, you're like, oh, it's not coming across, you know? So
Tyra would be so mad at you. You're not smiling with your eyes.
Yeah. Or even just like, I need you to arch your back. No, more, you know? And it's yeah. like a back doesn't arch that far, you know? So it's I think it's definitely good to kind of be at least a little bit aware of how it feels to be on the other side.
Yeah, the reason I asked, actually many years ago when I first was getting into doing modeling, I was working with someone who very much believed in like his artistic ability, and I'd never seen pictures of myself look like that before. And I was like, this dude is starting out, but clearly has some sort of like, there's something here. And so I wanted to work with him again. But he had never had any, I don't think there is a lot of training for how do you talk to someone while you're taking pictures of them naked. And so there were a lot of awkward moments. I mean, like sometimes he would be looking at the camera and he'd frown because he was mad about how the lighting was. But as the person standing there naked, you're like, you're frowning at a picture of me. Like,
oh,
that's not
yeah.
going to work.
Well, this is something that I try to never say, don't do that. Mm-hmm. Or let's not do this anymore or something. Because I feel like any kind of, whenever you're like making it in a negative way, then you put those doubts and negative thoughts into the person's head. And I want mm-hmm. the opposite to happen. I want, like, while the model is posing, I want for her to feel really confident and totally in control of herself and what she's doing. And so, yeah, I mean, I feel like there's, you see, I guess this is like in movies and stuff, but I'm sure that it's based in reality that there are photographers who are the whole time they're shooting, they're just like, yes, that's gorgeous. You're beautiful. You know, and that to me also feels kind of creepy because I don't, not to say that it can't be sincere, but there's something about it that feels really like phony. I think maybe just because that might not be my personality, that if I'm taking pictures of a model and I think to say like, oh yes, this looks, you know, you look beautiful. That's great. You know, and everything, like I'll do that. But I'll do it like I choose my moments, you know, like as I'm shooting, it's not a constant running yeah. loop of that. But it will be shooting. And then every once in a while, I'll just be like, oh, wow, that was, oh, yeah, keep, that's awesome. Just do what you just did, you know, things like that. But as long as it's natural. But it, like, I try to stay away from any negative place at all.
And I'm sure they very much appreciate that. Yeah. So, you know, on the thing you were saying, I'm like, oh, it's gorgeous. Keep doing it. Make love to the camera. Like, yeah, that whole thing. Like, yeah, part of it's like just maybe it's a little inauthentic to be that excited about anything for that long. But also there's, you know, we are skirting around the issue of these are all women, too. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how you identify, but like for the most part, there's the presumption of heterosexuality. So that's just a dynamic in art for all of forever.
Right.
Like, we're not talking about how art has been historically from a male gaze created by men with images of women. And there's also the presumption that, you know, the artist and perhaps the model are also both straight, although I think that
there might be some flirtation there.
Yeah,
or something
like
that. Okay.
How that affects both the dynamic while you're creating it, but also just the way that the art ends up looking and like the feel, like, and how, when the ultimate result comes out, how, you know, what the viewer is supposed to take away from it. Are we aroused by this? Are we just like looking at it like it's a strange scientific experiment?
Right.
Like, how does all that come together?
Okay, so this is definitely getting into the side of the whole psychology of this that mm-hmm. is always a little bit harder for me to talk about, in part because there are things that are, I'm not quite sure how to articulate.
Okay.
So speaking for myself then, correct in your assumption that I am heterosexual. And, so there is that side of it, which is, you know, the appreciation of, you know, women as being beautiful to me on a, you know, the way that a human being is beautiful, the way that, you know, any, basically, almost pretty much any living creature is beautiful, the complexity of the organism, you know, same way that, you know, a cat or a fish or even, you know, a mountain.
But it's okay if you think they're hot.
No. So I'm saying,
I think they're hot.
I'm saying to put that out there first, like there's that. And that's generally, you know, that's why it's fun to paint a portrait of, you know, a craggy faced old man, just the same as it's fun to paint a portrait of a beautiful young girl, you know, because there's that side of it. But then specifically to these paintings, there is also, yeah, what you're saying is the, just more of a general attraction coming from more of like, yes, a man to a woman. When you're in a life drawing class and you have the nude model in front of you who may or may not be the gender of your preference, and if they are, they may or may not be in any way attractive to you, mm-hmm. You know, you're focusing on other issues than that. But if they do happen to be the gender of your preference and they do happen to be attractive to you, that's not entirely out of your mind while you're drawing, you know, and I think it's kind of like, for me anyway, I think for probably a lot of people, there's a certain part of that that's hard to be kind of okay with, because there is like that trust issue there. And there is the, you know, like, especially when you're doing academic studies and that kind of thing, it's like, I'm doing this to learn, I'm not doing this to be aroused or anything like that. And you know, you're not always fully in control of how your brain is going to respond to things. When I'm doing these paintings, when I started doing these paintings, I think that there was a big part of me that was very apologetic about them having any kind of sexiness to it. And I, you know, it's weird, because like, I go back and forth. I look at the very first book. I brought you these two volumes, but there was actually a book I put out before these that was a soft cover. It was a really short run, and the title was still Quickie, but then underneath it, it said, like, I think it was 58 erotic portraits, something like that. So I used the word erotic there. Like, I was fully acknowledging that these are supposed to be sexy paintings. They're not just straight up figure paintings. I haven't used that subtitle on the subsequent books, but I think that at some point or another, I started to walk it back, where I felt a little bit concerned that people were going to be offended about, like, just the term male gaze sets me a little bit like on the defense. Okay. Just because, you know, it's like that. I can't help.
You're a guy.
Yeah. But at the same time, I don't want to make anybody uncomfortable, and I don't want to push anybody into any place where they would feel like they're, I don't know. It's just, I feel like there's so many little hangups that, and it's different for every person. And when I'm doing these paintings, like, I'm fully aware, because they are, I feel like they're sexy, but I mean, in the broad scope of things, they're pretty vanilla.
I mean, they're beautiful, and they bring out an eroticism, like, very much they to me, they have a feel of, yeah, I think that watching your girlfriend undress is the thing that always comes to me. And like, I think that encapsulates it, because like, a girlfriend is a person that you like, you do objectify, and you do want to touch their body parts, but you respect, and you know, and like, it's not a piece of meat kind of thing.
So much better than what I just said.
Okay.
But yeah, and that's the thing. It's like, when I look at contemporary pinup art, especially, because I really like a lot of the classic, you know, like Gil Elfgren and, or you know, Varga and Armstrong and guys that were doing it, like, back in that, like, you know, the nose art era. That stuff has that real kind of like playful quality to it. Like, you don't feel, obviously nobody's really taking it that seriously. Some of the earlier guys, I guess, like during the 20s, it wasn't quite as cheesecake as what it turned into more in the like 40s and 50s. But when I look at what is going on, like, whoever's doing pinup art today, and this is purely a taste point of view, you know, not to speak to anyone's technique or anything, but I feel like a lot of it is either stuck in that cheesecake wet place, or I see a lot of stuff that I don't even know who it's by or anything, but I'll just like see stuff at conventions and things like that, that is just like cold, dead stares. Like, the women's faces have no, I don't know if it's supposed to be like sexy face, but it comes across to me as just like emotionless.
No, that's, I mean, that's definitely a prevailing trend among images of women, where, first of all, they don't tend to make direct eye contact with the viewer. They're often like looking to the side. And I mean, you see it in movie posters too. If there's a male and a female both on the cover, the man's more likely to be looking at you and the female's looking away. And then there's on top of that, you know, you might have a look of like vacancy.
Yeah.
In addition, like, I'm not looking over there pondering something. I'm just like not probably pondering anything.
I was at San Diego Comic-Con a month or so ago. And somebody came by the booth and just like handed me a catalog for, you know, like comics and art books that their company puts out. And it was a lot of pinup and like erotica comics and things like that. Like, you know, like adult comics. And I was flipping through the book, and I was just like, they all look like androids or something. Like, these, the facial expressions, and some of them were like making that direct eye contact, but it looked like there was nothing going on back there. And with my own work, I wanted to really avoid that. I really, you know, that's what I like having that sense of that there is some kind of a connection, even if she's not making eye contact in the painting, but that there is that consent and permission and this like shared moment kind of a thing.
And how do you decide which poses are the ones that you're going to go with? Because there's like a variety of here. Like, it's not necessarily the standard, like one arm up behind the head and one arm bent to the hand on the hip.
The typical pinup poses a lot of the time are also really stiff and forced. I mean, I feel like there's a lot of things that people maybe do just because that's how it's been done for a long time. And there's nothing, you know, I guess it's just kind of like as I started doing these, I'm still really kind of figuring out where it's going and learning what I want to do with them. And so, you know, the poses that are interesting to me now tend to be things that are a little bit less conventional and less expected. And they might be something like taking off a t-shirt right in a moment like that might even look a little bit awkward sometimes, but if it's got some kind of authenticity to it as to this is how a human being actually takes off a t-shirt, as opposed to this is the sexiest way to take off a t-shirt. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And there's speaking to the way in which people do things specifically when they know they're being watched. And
right.
You know that some angles are more flattering than others. And what is the way you take off a t-shirt when you're alone versus the way you take it off in front of someone that you are seeing for the first time
right.
versus someone that you're comfortable with. Like there's huge differences there.
And absolutely. I think that most of the models that I work with, I mean, that's one of the things I like is that everyone does have a different way of just moving, you know, most of them, I think it does have a kind of voyeur aspect to it, as opposed to, I think of like Degas paintings of a woman bathing that are much less voyeuristic, where it really is just, well, some of them were, but some of them aren't. And, you know, these are definitely more flirtatious and, a lot more, like you're saying, like undressing for somebody, but in a way that is like, I don't know. I want it to be still based in reality as something that's relatable.
I really like this picture here. It's a woman who she's mostly naked, but it looks like she has tall socks and then like a sweater that she's pulled up over her breast, but it's drawn on a parking ticket envelope
yeah.
with the giant word violation.
Yeah.
Did you not pay a ticket?
That's actually how I pay my tickets now.
Yeah, I
I don't get them very often. I finally got around to registering my car with my. For a long time, I hadn't updated my driver's license, so I couldn't get my car registered to my address, like to get a parking stamp. Mm-hmm. You know, so I would have to be dodging the PPA frequently, and I would often, as you know, the PPA is always watching.
Oh, they
and they'll get
exist
you
exist right outside your butthole.
Yeah, and
ready to pounce.
So, you know, I've only done this a few times because it took me a while to come up with that this might be a possible way to take some of the sting out of getting a ticket. But since you can pay online, you don't have to actually mail the envelope in. I'll do a little drawing on the envelope and then I'll go up on Facebook and post the drawing and I'll say, I got a ticket this morning. If anybody wants to pay it for me, I'll send you the envelope.
Oh, right.
And, yeah, it's generally, it's a lot of fun. Like people seem to, you know, respond to that pretty well. And I don't have to pay my parking tickets, which is nice. I really don't get along with the PPA.
I don't know that a lot of people do.
I was shocked when I found out that they're not even the city. They're like, they just write tickets and I guess the city gets a cut or something, but I don't think that's right.
I don't know how it works. I know that they are one of the most reliable sources of income the city has, though.
Yeah, and
for whatever that's worth,
they're probably extremely well organized. And yeah, anyway,
I don't know.
Off topic.
Parking wars. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. No. Yeah. These have like that they look very soft. Also, like I feel like the texture is like if you reached out and touched it, it would be like petting a bunny.
So I'm still using these paintings as a way to kind of experiment and explore what I'm doing with painting. And you know, I guess I kind of got really sidetracked way back when I was talking about that I was doing this as a kind of an experiment to see what it would be like to work in a more painterly style. And I didn't think it would go very far, and I did a few, and I was like, wow, this is really fun. I'm having much more fun doing this than the work that I'm supposed to be doing today, you know. And I just kept doing more and more of them and working with, you know, different models and kind of evolving the series and everything. But as I was doing it, I was getting more and more frustrated with the illustration work that I was doing, where I had this much more uptight approach to everything. And so about 2 years ago, I think it was about, well, it was further back than that, because it was 5 years ago I started doing the series. And that frustration was just like building and building. And then about 2 years ago, I'd been thinking like, maybe I can like slowly start shifting all of my work to look more like this and have more of these like soft brush strokes and, you know, chunkiness and work with texture and that kind of thing. And then a series of situations happened with different clients, like in rapid fire, that were very unsatisfying, that I just, one day I was just like, nope, I think I'm just going to start doing paintings the way I want to do them. And I'm not going to surprise anybody. Like I said, you can't just like turn into a different person on a client that you've been working with. But I just started doing all my paintings like this and changed my whole process. And I was kind of running both at the same time. And then when I started showing, like if a client came to me who already knew my work that was cleaner and tighter, and then I'd show them the new stuff and I'd be like, well, yeah, I'm totally happy to do that with you. I just want to make you aware of this other thing I'm doing now and see what you think. And I've been really lucky that people have responded much more to the way that I want to do things. I mean, every once in a while I still get someone who's like, that's a little bit too all over the place for us. We want it a bit looser or a bit tighter than that. But usually that's not the case. And so, yeah, like as I'm still doing these paintings and I'm still kind of experimenting with like abstracting, like where can you lose edges? Where can you, you know, just drag the figure and the background into each other and have it still give the effect that you want. And yeah, I feel like starting the series was just kind of like a random impulse I had one day that has turned out to be one of the, I think, best decisions I've ever made professionally, because
that's awesome.
It's guided me into a much happier place with my painting.
Well, that's cool. So the name of this series is Quickie, and you've got two so far?
Mm-hmm.
And then where else can people check out your work?
My site, dvpalumbo.com, D as in David, V as in Vincent, palumbo.com, mm-hmm. is pretty much links to anything else that I do. I have a Twitter that I almost never use. I post work on Facebook a lot because that seems to be where people respond the most. It's much more conversational, which is why I prefer it. Mm-hmm. I have blogs that I try to keep updated, but I'm kind of all over the place. And then there's like, you know, other places on the internet that things hang out.
And also, if people Google you, you're not the bodybuilder Dave Palumbo.
Yeah, did you discover that?
Yeah, I was like, wait, this guy is a painter?
I had recently somebody contacted me. It was a student who just graduated who wanted to ask me some questions about getting started in illustration and that kind of thing. And we had set up a time to talk, and he called me up on the phone, and we're talking, and he tells me that somehow he had accidentally contacted the other David Palumbo, who is a massive bodybuilder. And I think he was, I believe he's retired from competing anymore, but in the time that he was competing, he was like, you know, top of his field, like huge dude. And, yeah, if you go to davepalumbo.com, you'll see what I mean. And he had somehow accidentally contacted the other Palumbo.
Okay.
And he said that they were talking on the phone for like 20 minutes.
What?
They're having, he's like asking him for advice and like getting his career started and all this kind of stuff. And he said like at some point in the conversation, he asked him a specific question that he was like, you know, I think you might be thinking you're talking to someone that you're not.
Oh, no.
It's like, how did you guys go 20 minutes without realizing that?
That's...
It's like, I don't know. It just... And he's like, but it was a really good conversation. And, you know, I was thinking, like, well, I guess it's probably not that... I'd imagine... I actually, one of... another podcast that I really love to listen to is about screenwriting. And I'm not a writer at all. I never have any aspirations of becoming a professional writer. But this podcast is like, I love to listen to it because these are creative professionals. And the way they solve problems is something I can relate to and the way I have to solve problems in my work. And so I was thinking, it's like, this guy is one of the top bodybuilders of when he was competing. I'm sure he's got a lot to tell any student who's coming out of school about, you know, how to get focused and follow your goals and that kind of thing.
Get a team.
Yeah. So as I understand it, he's a very nice guy, but we've never actually met.
So now you have the option of multiple Dave Palumbos that you might want to hit up and find out more about them.
I understand there's a lot of us.
Oh, okay. All right. So take your pick. No. So this Dave Palumbo is an awesome illustrator, and you should check out his stuff. So anything specifically that you have coming up that people should check out? How recently did this book come out?
This book is not technically out yet, although by the time this podcast airs, it probably will be.
Sweet.
They ship on Thursday.
All right. Quickie 2 is out, and you can buy it online?
Yeah. You can buy it through me, or you can probably get it through Bud Plant. And I'm not sure, actually. I know the publisher is selling it, but... There was some kind of they just switched. I used to be with Brand Studio Press, and now it's called Chupuy, which is spelled XUPUY. But he was also going by Trinket, and it's really confusing to me. So I don't quite know where to tell people to go for that one. But
they'll get it through you then.
Yeah, you can get it through me.
Yeah, awesome. Well, thank you so much for not only for this awesome interview, but also for these books, because these are gorgeous.
Thank you.
And I love it. So thank you much for being here, and thank you everyone for listening. And have a lovely day. Thank you for listening to Sex with Timmery. Sex with Timmery, the podcast, is produced by Nathan Karuna. Our opening music is by Charles Evans. Our closing music is by Hanya Lee. Be sure to check out sexwithtimmery.com, Sex with Timmery on Facebook, and tweet at me, Timmery_LEIGH. If you're a fan of the show, if you like it at all, a little bit maybe even, rate and review us on iTunes and tell your friends all about it. And thank you.